offices of China Hall on a Tuesday.
Tuesday morning.
Terrific Tuesday at that. We didn't get much rain this morning. We got rain last night. That was a little quick.
It's supposed to be nice today, right?
Yeah, I think so. It is.
I brought
beautiful.
My sandals, so I hope it
you
is.
Did?
I did.
You did bring your sandals. Those look like new sandals.
Yep, the Birkenstocks, man.
Nice. Those are fancy these. Sandals. Little you even large. Do your toenails for us?
I made sure they were all pretty. And...
That's awesome. All right, we're figuring out how to share on Facebook. Did we get that all dialed in?
Keep going.
Josh is going to check out his audio, make sure that we're good on our audio.
Yep. I think
there's one person watching, and that's Josh.
Audio is good.
Sweet. Terrific Tuesday up here at the offices of China Hall. We had a wonderful weekend. We had a good event.
What was that?
Akon C and his group, the Hope Movement. They are bringing awareness to many things in town. This was focused on the homeless, and they're bringing awareness to that in the community. The Landing is a nonprofit that was up here sharing about what they're doing in the community. They served food from Hog Tie Catering and Nupa. Nice. They had music artists playing up here, four different artists. There was a young girl that even got up and sang, and that was fun to watch. You could tell she was nervous, but once she got going, she had it. It was really good to see. So, yeah, it's been good. It's been good up here at the China Hall, and we're excited for our guest today. Introduce yourself.
Who's our guest?
I keep looking for a monitor.
There it is right there. That's our phone. That's it. Yep.
I'll pretend there isn't a monitor. So. My name is John Becker, and I guess I'm here because I've known Bucky for probably almost 5.5 years now. 6 years, I believe, this fall. I'll always remember meeting you because I thought it was very fortuitous, for me at least, because I was looking to expand my business into Rochester. I have a business in Red Wing since 2002, Red Wing Framing and Fine Art Printing. And then 6 years ago, I was planning on expanding to Rochester and struggling, trying to really figure out how to connect, who to connect with. And it was a sheetrock worker who was working on the doggery at the time. And I said, who would I talk to if you were me and I needed to figure out how to connect? I said, talk to Bucky. So I went right over to your office. You were there. You showed me a few vacancies right away. Nothing worked out, but eventually it materialized. And I got a great space in Rochester, right next door to Lim Lab at the Riverside Building. And for my purposes, it's perfect. It really is. It's got street visibility. It's small enough where I can afford it because it's not an inexpensive community. And I have parking. I mean, those are the three big wins that you look for in my business.
That's awesome.
So I guess that's
the downtown parking. That's super nice. Yeah.
It is very shaded downtown parking, I should add. I mean, it's even nicer than nice. It's great. The turnover is constant. So, you know, I mean, sometimes it's full and sometimes it isn't. And my neighbors are great, too. And what really sealed the deal for me when I first looked at it was Cambria was nosing around at the time, and I had just come to learn about Cambria because I was flying on a Sun Country flight, and every ad in the magazine is a Cambria ad, and I knew that they were all about the horizontal and we're all about the vertical, so I thought counters and walls, you know, it makes sense, and it has made a lot of sense for different reasons. I mean, it all materializes differently, and you know, the businesses that the people that we're working with now in Rochester are not necessarily the same businesses and organizations that I thought I would be working with 5 years ago, which is fine. You know, you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. It's been terrific. It's just made a lot of friends. So, yeah.
And now you're on to your third location.
Yeah. So we opened another location. So the idea has been, all along since we started in 2002, was to have at three locations, let's put it this way, three revenue streams. And for many years, we thought the third revenue stream was online. So we made a big investment in doing things online. And we did that for 7 years. We're still doing it. It's not a very active part of our business. And for a lot of reasons that it wasn't really why we got into business. We wanted to work with people. We didn't want to work with anonymity, you know, people online and, you know, And the business is different when it's online. You know, they want it immediately. They want it at rock bottom prices, and they want to return it at no cost. I mean, things like that. You know, so it's different than working with people where it's more tactile and it's more face to face. So we backed away from that about 2 years ago, and then we lost a big customer, so it kind of backed away from us as well. But when we lost that big customer, we realized that the online business was really holding our margins down. I mean, it was great for cash flow, but the margins were just not good.
Your competition has to be huge, I imagine, as well.
It is. You know, and you're looking for a tiny slice on this gigantic. So it's a question, do you want to be a little fish in a large body of water or small, whatever. But
Or the opposite.
With our experience in Rochester, we started looking around again as to how we could grow our business, how we could get that third revenue stream. And we really liked what we saw in Northfield. We've been aware of what's going on in Northfield for a long time. And we see kind of on a smaller scale what's going on in Northfield parallel to Rochester, aside from the DMC thing going on within Rochester, but a lot of community activation in downtown Northfield. You see a lot of that now in Rochester, and I see a lot more of it now too. Grassroots kind of guerrilla arts activity going on, which I think is very exciting and very healthy for a community. You see a lot of that in Northfield. The schools have a real strong influence, of course, on the economy in Northfield. So when we opened in Red Wing, maybe this was a bad decision in the beginning, but we decided, well, let's just name the business where we're located and what we do. So we started calling ourselves Red Wing Framing and Fine Art Printing. And it's actually great for search term visibility.
Yeah, right on Google, SEO, it's yeah. rocks. Yeah,
it helps a lot because those are search terms. Yep. And if it's built into your name, you have a built-in advantage. It's a little challenging when you start to try to scale. So
you're the outsider coming in.
You're the outsider. So that's why, of course, we kind of, and we also wanted to kind of make a unique brand in each community because each community is different. So Rochester Framing and Fine Art Printing is obviously in Rochester. And it's a little, I guess I would call professional, upscale, I don't want to say sterile, but, you know, I mean, it's a very much a kind of a downtown design environment. The one in Red Wing is a very traditional kind of mom and pop shop. You walk in, you know, you're going to get warmly greeted. You're probably familiar with the people who are there. Maybe the shop dog might be there as well. Northfield is something in between. It's going to be probably, I'm hopeful, like this. This is what I see here, is that you're doing a lot of activation. Mm-hmm. You're stirring things up, is what you're doing. We hope to be able to do some of that in Northfield. We don't really have the room to do it in either Red Wing or Rochester, so we can only participate in other activations. So, if it all works out, we'll be able to. And that will be, our third leg of our three-legged milk stool that we call our.
And when you say activations, are you saying events and?
Events are a big part of it. Experiences, just non-traditional ways of getting people into your shop.
Yeah.
And talking about, because what we offer a lot of things, and it isn't really until a customer sits down and starts telling us what they're trying to accomplish. Can we really determine? So it's a high touch sales environment, and particularly when you're dealing with some things that are extraordinarily personal to people, and I didn't realize this until I got into the business, and it happened almost right away, is you get into a lot of bereavement issues with people who somebody's passed just very recently. And they have something that they want on their wall to remind them of that person every day. And, it's not uncommon for people to start crying in our shop. It really isn't. And for both good and bad reasons, But, you are really close to the soul with these customers in what you're dealing with. And, they're trusting you with with something that has infinite value to mm-hmm. them because it can't be replaced.
And it makes me think why the two businesses are so different, of the internet, the non-touch, the, like you said, mm-hmm. race to the bottom. I got three tabs open and I'm just cycling what's the cheapest versus I'm actually in the shop trying to figure out how to frame something and get it up on my wall that really means something to me. Totally different.
It is totally different. I didn't know how. And it's funny because if I wouldn't have lost that customer, and that customer was actually a customer in the UK, and all he was a front end website, and he would just broker out the business.
Got it. To and you're the middle of yep. all right. Yeah. We produce the work.
We
that
produce,
was sold.
And then we'll do a drop ship, and yep. you know so. It's a great model for him. I mean, he collects the money right away. Mm-hmm. It's just a website, you know, and then he'll just, like I said, broker the business out to somebody out there that he's got a relationship with. And so you're competing with still a lot of other people. But if I wouldn't have lost that customer, and his business was beginning to struggle too, I could see, I probably would have kept it for as long as I could mm-hmm. because I kept thinking, you know, more business is better, right? Isn't mm-hmm. that what we're all taught?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not true.
Right.
You know, it's, oops, sorry about that. That's been a relatively recent change. So one thing, if I could just elaborate a little bit why we feel we do business.
Yeah, and explain what you do, because okay. I think people might have a general sense, but not.
Sure.
And like what you sell and stuff like
sure.
that.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, we're a job shop. By and large, so we're in the industry, we're what we would call a low volume, high mix manufacturer, because we manufacture a product, we build a product to a specification, but it might be a quantity of one. Mm. It typically is only a quantity of one. So it's our bread and butter, our sweet spot in our business is custom framing, and we've really tried to elevate ourselves. To be as good as we can possibly be through a lot of education, a lot of certification, a lot of activity in the professional organizations. So, I mean, we take the framing part very, very seriously. And it's something that a lot of people, you know, they don't pay a lot of attention to framing. But there's that tiny little segment of people who are really, really into it. So we do custom framing, and we'll do, you know, from big to small. It doesn't really matter. You know, just give us the job, and we'll evaluate whether or not we're a good fit for it. And in that end, Valerie, my partner, my wife, she's the best. She really is. She's a master.
Without her, there would be no.
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. It's true. You know, thank before you bank. That's what they say. But with Valerie, you know, she takes it so, she's so modest about it. She really is. That's the beauty of it. You know, she doesn't, I'm the one who has to kind of promote her because she's not into self-promotion at all. She's so Minnesota modest. But she is the only master framer in the state of Minnesota. There's only 60 on the planet. It's a very professional organization. Really, I guess what we would call hardcore framing is really more about preservation and presentation and doing it in a very neutral archival environment.
Mm-hmm.
So the art doesn't get damaged. Because all art is in a slow state of disintegration. It really is. Mm. It's just whether you realize it or not, and
right.
you probably won't notice it in your lifetime, but it you know, whether it's an oil paintings are constantly evaporating oil, you know, slowly and slowly over time. Pastels are literally disintegrating in front of your eyes. So the longer you can make it last, clearly, you know, the better it is for the art. And then Claire is in our Red Wing shop. She runs our Red Wing shop. She has been, Val has been her mentor in the framing side of the business. And, Claire's going through the certification process as well. So now we're the only, and there's a two-step process. There's the certified, and then there's the master certified. So we're very proud to say we're the only multi-certified frame shop business as well in Minnesota. So we do take it very seriously. And then what we try to do to complement the framing is the printing. So
okay.
We're a fine art printer, and by that what that means is we print using modern technology, but our prints are very, very stable. They're guaranteed to be stable for, you know, hundreds of years under the right conditions, under the right framing conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And so we print on a number of medias, watercolors, photo papers, acrylic prints. That's a different kind of print, but we're not looking for a volume. We're not a volume printer. You know, people ask us occasionally, you know, can I get a discount if I get 100 prints made? Well, not much of a discount, you know, because we're not really set up to be a volume printer. We're very hands-on, you know, one sheet at a time, trim it to size, evaluate the print. So, again, we're kind of trying to fly under the radar, so to speak. We're not trying to compete with art.com or, you know, any of the other online vendors that, you know, you might be able to do, and I think you probably can. You can do custom framing online now. You know, there's an outfit out of DC that is, and we'll probably see them move here closely. And they've got a lot of investor capital money, and they're doing. It's a different model. So let's say you have a handkerchief that your grandmother left behind, and you want to get that framed. You would send it to them. You would build your frame online through their website, and then they would build it and then send it back to you. So it's a two-step process. It's kind of hinky, you know. A lot of people are skeptical about whether that will work. They're still the big box players. I mean, they own half the market, literally. I mean, and they did that overnight when they decided to enter that business. And I'm not talking just about Michaels, you know. It's a Target and Walmart. They're huge into it. And, you know, they're cheap knockoff frames from overseas, and you know, a lot of them are under embargo right now, or not embargo, but because of the tariff, we're starting to see the playing field level a little bit. So we're in what I would call a very mature business. Framing goes back hundreds of years, you know, and it used to be every town had at least one framer. That's much less the case than it used to be. I think when we got into this business, I think the estimates were that there were 20,000 frame shops in the United States, and I think now there's less than 5, which is interesting that it would tell you to run away from that industry because it's not a growing industry. But what happens is there's fallout in very narrow, you know, desirable areas, and there are some really good desirable areas that you want to be in if you're in the framing business, who have gone out of business and who have abandoned their market, and that market is available for someone to come along. So we kind of saw that in Northfield, kind of saw that here in Rochester. We felt that the market was underserviced for our product. But like I said, who we thought our customers were going to be 5 years ago are not necessarily the customers we're seeing today. But it's all for the better. It really is.
Can you share about some of your work in Rochester?
Sure. Well, so part of the way we kind of promote ourselves is, you know, our goal is not to get wealthy on this. Our goal in this is to, you know, have a lifestyle that's, we can see our grandkids when we want. You know, we don't have a boss. We don't necessarily get to pick our own hours. That part is not, is because we work constantly. But we love what we do. So a lot of times what we do is we'll try to connect some of our community passions with some of the work we do, like with Riverside. You know, like Riverside, we did a really nice mural project with them in building up to it, they took a lot of the kids' art, and you know, we did a co-exhibit with them, and that was a lot of fun, and then really genuinely paid off for us. I know it did, but it wasn't by design. That wasn't the intent to do it. You do it because it's the right thing to do. You know, when you can contribute, you try to contribute. Pittsburgh Blue, we did all their interiors. That was
those are some big prints in there.
There's some big prints.
I've been in there once. I just remember them distinctively, especially in like the. Is it the meeting rooms? I think it's the meeting rooms.
They have two private dining rooms.
Yeah.
And the prints are on barn doors. So they can slide them in and slide them out, and they have a TV behind them.
Right.
So it's that was their thinking. It was a great idea. I liked it a lot. I love it because it's got some significance to it when you pull it. It's a very heavy piece. So our sweet spot is we can go very, very large if necessary. And then we did another project with the Fuji
Steakhouse.
Fuji Steakhouse, thank you. I think it's called Fuji Sushi.
Sushi and Steakhouse. Yeah.
It's kind of like ours.
Yeah, yeah, right. Northfield Framing and Fine Arts. Yes, say that five times.
Fine Art Printing, actually. Yeah, Fine Art Printing. We did that project. That was a lot of fun because it was a very quick turnaround. A lot of times when we get into restaurant projects, the last thing they do is art. And it's the last thing they'll contract with, and they have, you know, a concrete deadline, you know, with an
We need something on the walls.
Yeah. So those are, you know, crazy projects in Neat. Many cases. But we like the hospitality projects. Our favorite projects, though, are really the smaller ones, the ones that have just deep personal significance to the person that we're working with. We did one in Red Wing. I'll never forget it. It was, I think it was a seventh generation baptismal gown. And this gown was so fresh. It still had mother's milk from over 100 years dried on the gown. And
something else. This, Josh and I are picturing that like, whoa.
Oh, I know. And this
we need this.
This thing was incredibly fragile. I mean, it was just, I was frightened to, you know.
It's dry, right? I mean, it just hasn't been.
Nobody's done anything to this gown, you know, and it's old fabric. And fortunately, you know, it's made with just strictly cotton. There wasn't any synthetics or anything in it. But, you know, it's bridal gown days were done. You know, there was not going to be used any longer as a bridal gown. They understood that it was too fragile to do it. So, but they wanted to be able to appreciate it. So it's a museum display, really. It ends up being in many cases. So every project is different. There's no telling what will come in the door next.
Do you get many people that come from out of town? And like,
well, we do in Rochester. In Rochester, what happens in
it's a hub.
It is. And yeah. what's really interesting, I didn't expect this, and this is again part of the unanticipated part of the business, was somebody who's coming to Rochester maybe once a week for a regular treatment, and they may be coming from Davenport, Iowa, or Dubuque, or Sioux Falls, or you know anywhere within a driving distance. They're a great customer. They'll come in 1 week, drop it off, come back next week, pick it up. Mm. You know, they know mm-hmm. they're going to be here. They've got time, by and large, when they're here. So, and that's what we've learned is when what we call high touch sales is, you know, we really do invest a lot of time with each customer, you know, to make sure that they're completely satisfied. There is a bit of a sticker shock that people have sometimes with custom framing. They're just like, you know, I only paid $50 for the art, you know.
Yeah.
But
it's custom work, though. It's custom woodwork,
it
right?
It is custom woodwork. It's cabinetry, almost, right. Really, is one way of thinking of it.
I think the other thing you're up against when that sticker shock is, like, people remember the last time they're in, like, Walmart, and they're looking at all the different frames that are there, and they're like, well, how hard can it be to just put it into that frame, and won't it look good? And you know the difference of what it looks like.
True. You know, and you know, it, when you see a really well-designed piece, speaks for itself. It really does. You know it when you see it. Yeah, it's a home run. And it's so funny, too, because when the designers take so much pride in it, and they just... There's this unveiling that occurs with a customer, you know, because they can't wait. They're really excited about it, and they unveil, and they start crying, and they're hugging and crying, and it's just hilarious.
That's awesome.
It is a lot of fun. So that's kind of the rub of it, what we do. Three locations, they're all each about 45 minutes apart, so we're not cannibalizing each location, which is very important. You know, we did have a handful of customers from Northfield. In Red Wing and in Rochester, we have a handful of both Red Wing. But you know, you want them close, but not so close. So we'll see. You know, we haven't even had a grand opening yet in Northfield. We've had a kind of a soft opening since the middle of July. Got a great location. We're very excited about it. It's if you know Northfield, there's a town square. We're on Bridge Square, so literally we. we stare at a little tiny town square that has either a popcorn wagon in the middle of it or brass bands playing, or so the activation is already built in.
Right.
And just this past weekend, they had a community dinner for 1,200. They closed two blocks downtown Northfield, and they had a free meal for anybody who wanted it. The only stipulation was you could not sit next to somebody you knew.
Wow, that's one rule.
Right, yeah. Down Centerfield, or right down Main Street, and it was really awesome. Yeah. Place was packed, totally packed, and it was all, you know, farmers market provided all the ingredients. You know, the cake decorators provided the sweets, and
wow.
Yeah, it was really. I don't know who came up with that idea, but it was genius.
Josh, do you know why Northfield is famous? One of the reasons.
I don't.
There was a famous robber. Does that ring a bell?
No.
We'll let John tell the story of what he knows.
Okay. Well, yeah. I had no idea how big of a deal this is until we moved.
It's a big deal.
This is the fourth largest festival in Minnesota.
Fourth largest. Okay. Yeah.
And I mean, you're talking about some big festivals.
Right.
So Jesse James and his gang tried to rob a bank in downtown Northfield, and they were thwarted. And then they were chased out of town. They split up. They went in different directions. It was a very big deal. And there's just a ton of legacy attached to this thing. I'm only beginning to learn. And I've been told that...
So they made a festival like...
Jesse James Days.
Jesse James
that.
Days.
That's awesome.
They do a reenactment. The bank's still there.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
That's great.
And you know, it's...
That's great.
It's a... It's a point of pride to be part of the reenactment, you know. So it's not just, you know, farmer with a forest. They take it very, very seriously.
And the bank is a museum, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I think it's the History Center now.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the history.
So, and that's in 2 weeks. So we're gonna.
Oh, sweet.
We're gonna.
Now
do
you gotta go, Josh.
Oh, you gotta go. You gotta go. It's a lot of fun. So. You know, each community, so the one thing that's in common, there's a couple of things actually that are very, in by design and not initially, but we learned a long time ago. So when we moved to Red Wing, when we set up shop in 2002, part of why we moved there, well, a big part of it is we really kind of were tired of going 0 miles per hour on 494. And
so you were coming from the cities?
We moved on from the cities. I'd actually had another career. And
0 miles per hour.
Oh, it was. It was totally. It was just. So we wanted to be able to walk to work. We wanted to be able to know who our neighbors were. We wanted to be able to, you know which neighbors needed help when they needed help. Those kinds of things. We really wanted a very, almost the Mayberry kind of environment. And we found it. We really did. And what we found is we set up our shop in downtown Red Wing. And if you haven't been to Red Wing, and I'm going to do a pitch about it at some point here, but it's a very authentic downtown. You know, it's almost frozen in time in many ways, and it has a very strong preservation ethic. And that has to do with some of the, the town elders who valued old buildings and not tearing old buildings down. So we love that. We love the charm. We love the authenticity of it. You know, we like having a beat cop who walks by and checks our locks at night, things like that. It was a very... so we just... And as we thought about growing our business, I mean, there are a lot of... We can go to a strip mall.
You already knew Minneapolis. You could easily... Are you talking about in Red Wing specifically?
No, wherever.
Okay.
Whether we stay in or we stay out, you know, how to grow. But we didn't want to be in a strip mall, and we didn't want to be in a mall, and we didn't, you know, we were really kind of picky. And it literally took us 5 years to find the spot we have in the Riverside building before we found it. And, of course, the recession in the meantime happened.
Yeah, so. Right. Framing took a dip.
Oh, my gosh. That was frightening. But we realized that's our part of our brand. Is if we're going to be old school, we're going to be hands-on, it's going to be a well-crafted product that we're going to sell, we have to kind of, that's got to be part of our feng shui in the buildings we, so when we got into the Riverside building, which I feel is probably one of the last classic buildings, you know, in Rochester. In fact, I was joking with a journalist at the Post Bulletin that in Rochester, you know, buildings are torn down that are in danger of becoming historic. I mean, that's how bad it is.
Yeah, that's perspective.
Which is unfortunate, you know, because mm-hmm. if you once you tear them down, they're gone. They're never coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So we got what we wanted at the Riverside building, and then we found what we wanted in the Northfield location as well.
How did you find your Red Wing location? That one looks more like a house.
So that one's really an interesting building. That building is built in 1895, and it was actually moved to its current location. And it was moved from the location of where the Sheldon Theater is currently located. So when they went to build the Sheldon Theater, they moved our building across the parkway where it's located now. Before they moved it, it was the Chinese Laundry. Which is, you know, I love the provenance of these old buildings. You know, the fact that there was fine china sold in this building, I think, is so cool and charming. And then it was so now it looks kind of like a little chalet building. It's a little one story building. The original owners, it was a father son photography team, and they were heavily involved in postcard photography. So this was in the early 1900s, and they'd run around with their, you know, big camera with the bellows and they'd take scenic postcards. And then what their sweet spot was, which was very clever, was these were color postcards. Mm-hmm. So, you know, color photo processing wasn't available then. So what they would do is they'd take the negatives and they'd send them to Germany, and they would colorize them. You know, and if you look at it under a microscope, you can see what it is. It's just little dots. You know, like a comic book almost. Mm-hmm. And then they send it back. So the turnaround time was very long. And they were really successful, and they generated a lot of really cool postcards, which people still collect. It's the Lidberg Photography Studio. But then World War I broke out, and then all things German were embargoed, and they were out of business. And so what do most people do when they're out of business? They become real estate people.
And that's what they did?
They became very successful real estate operators in Red Wing. So
that is funny.
I thought that was kind of a
charming. Is the family still involved in Red Wing in any way?
I don't know. I don't know of any Lidbergs. I haven't met any Lidbergs in the family. But it was a prominent family. I think that just probably the name got married out at some point.
That is a good story. I like, too, how your business has, I feel, tied into history in certain ways, whether that be through location or marketing or
communities. Well, it's interesting because I think Josh, this is a big part of Josh's business, is being able to storytell. And, you know, and those are stories, you know, which are, and they're just ripe to pick because they're already there. In the beam of our building where we're at in Red Wing, it's just a stacked limestone foundation. It's a very old building. It's kind of rough shape too, you know, it needs some work and attention, but it's functional and it works fine for our purposes. But in the basement, somebody has carved in one of the beams, two initials, and I think it's GS, and then 1914. And then somebody has gone back and whitewashed over it, so that it doesn't get worn away, that you're aware of it at least. And there's no telling what that was. I mean, it could be a pet turtle that was buried down there, or it could be, it's not Lidberg, so it's not a...
Huh.
But again, it's part of the storytelling, right? You know, and the stories are everywhere if you look for them.
That's sweet. Let's take a little bit of a 180 from history to the new age, because this is something that Josh and I like to talk about, and I know you appreciate as well, is the social media aspect in business.
Sure.
What does it mean to you as far as having social media in your business? Is it helping? What are you seeing?
And I was just going to ask too, like, you know, you talk about these cool custom projects, like, do you show them off and take pictures to like showcase the work that you guys have done?
Okay. So it's a great question actually. And I've backed away personally from doing a lot of it within our business because I have such a talented and creative, staff that I'm working with that does it. It's hard for me to imagine right now what running a business without being able to tell all these stories would be like without a venue like social media, whether it be Instagram or Facebook or whatever. And it really, none of these are very old technologies either. So if you can't imagine what it's like, and it's still all relatively recent vintage, it gives you an idea of the profound impact that a lot of it's had. We do a couple. One thing that we've learned is it's important to have personality with storytelling, and you can't have multiple people, you know, creating that personality. So that's why I've really, Claire, and it's interesting too, because Claire is a different demographic than me. She's in her 30s, you know, she's very creative. She's very astute to, you know, what the kids are doing, I guess is one way of putting it.
How people are using social, right?
Yeah. So it's worked out great. And it'd be different than the way I would do it. You know, mine's a little more chaotic and random and sometimes hard to understand because the humor isn't necessarily obvious. And humor, again, is, you know, it's difficult because it just doesn't always work. So it's been fun that way. There are things that I think we need to do a better job of. One thing we do in Rochester in particular is we ask everybody, because almost everybody's a new customer at this point. We've been here for 5 years, but you know we're still getting a lot. For the most part, they're new to us. And we'll ask them, you know, how do you know of us? And it's interesting. Almost right down the line, Google, I drive past the building. Hmm. And the street visibility, again, it's kind of old school marketing, but it was important to us, and we, you know, that's why that building was such a home run for us. Mm-hmm. But we don't try to generate or drive Google traffic. We're doing things a little bit more organically, and you know, we did all the things that you were supposed to do way back when you were supposed to blog all the time, and you know that constant state of change within your website and it would drive you up in terms of, you know, search rankings and things like that. And when we were doing more online activity, we paid a lot more attention to that. But, you know, I don't think I've checked my Google Analytics in months. Now, I'd be very interested in knowing if there was something I could do on my Google Analytics side to get more, to instead of 50-50, make it maybe 60-40 or 70-30. I don't really care how they get there, but I know that's how they're finding us in many ways.
And I noticed you have separate Instagram accounts per store, correct?
Right.
It's just Instagram kind of seems like the perfect area for a lot of the visual work that you're doing.
It really is. It lends itself perfectly because it's a visual first kind of. It is important to kind of keep each location with its own personality.
Brand and pair, yeah. Makes sense. Especially I like that idea.
If you're going to do hyper-local, you know, and you're really going to try to hit the things that are just important to your customers.
Yeah.
So what we see a lot of interest in lately is discussion within Facebook groups. And there'll be groups that will be dedicated to things that you're, you know, trying to market or sell or whatever. And it's easier almost to have a dialogue in that environment than the traditional, you know, post a Facebook post and you know, it's...
So is it a group that's specific to the area of the shop or is it a group that's specific to the trade and the industry?
Both. Okay. So it's the... And both of them are equally active. The hyper-local ones are the neighborhood organizations, you know, who... Obviously, you know, nobody's interested in a constant sale, you know, or a pitch. You have to figure out
who your tribe is,
mm-hmm. And figure out, you know, how you can contribute and still maintain visibility for yourself. Mm-hmm. So what we do within each location, you know, we like to pick out two, at least. Do-gooding organizations, what I would call them, and like in the case of Rochester, it would be NAMI, mm-hmm. National Association of Mental Illness. In Red Wing, it would be something probably a little bit more cultural, like the Sheldon Theater or the Red Wing Potters Association. I kind of track that. But, you know, you play the, not just sponsor, but actively sponsor.
Yeah, right.
I mean, if you, not just
I'm
give me
a big
money.
Believer in that.
Yes, and not, you know, your logo on a banner is fine, but it's really not going to drive any customers. But if you can associate yourself with that organization and just pour it on, mm-hmm. the good things will happen.
Yeah. Yeah, and are you going as far as to even volunteer at some of those events?
Like, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, right.
So, like, and I'm hoping we get a chance. I don't know what your timing on any of this is. And I know I've been rattling on.
No, it's been great. Okay. I've learned a lot.
Is if we could talk about CMAC as well, which is another organization I'm very involved in, and which has, so that's the Southeast Minnesota Arts Council. And there are 11 arts councils in Minnesota, and the Metropolitan one is the largest one. Southeast Minnesota, CMAC, which is the second largest one. It includes 11 counties and Rochester, Olmsted County is dead center of it. And this is actually a funding vehicle for artists and art cultural opportunities. And so whether you know it or not, everything you buy in Minnesota, there's a 3/8 of 1% sales tax that's being attached to it. And that's for the legacy fund.
And when you say everything you buy?
Anything that's got a sales tax.
Got it.
Anything that's got sales tax on it, there's this tiny little bit that adds up to hundreds of millions of dollars a year. And I can go into the whole history, but you're not really interested in that. But what that means is this is money that's dedicated to parks and trails, clean water, arts and culture. There's a couple of others. But these are what they call difficult to fund activities that are important to people.
Hmm.
And why I call them difficult to fund is at one point in the state legislature, it was an easy thing to cut. You know, if the budget was tight and they were close to it at the end of the budget session, the DNR would pay the price every time. Because it was an easy money thing to cut, you know, less pheasants or whatever, you know. And arts and culture were the same thing. So a lot of people got tired of that game and they said, no, we're going to have dedicated funding. And so our Arts and Cultural Legacy Amendment was passed through a voter referendum. Overwhelmingly, the people voted to tax themselves. And then so that money comes back to people. So the state collects it and now it has to come back. And CMAC is a grants organization. It's a nonprofit, but its focus really is to distribute money that's been collected back to the community. So I've been involved on the CMAC board of directors for the last 5 years. I've got 1 year left before my term limits compel me to leave, which would be sad because I'll really miss being there. But this is an amazing grant opportunity for people to fund, you know, something that they've always wanted to do, whether it be a photo exhibit or a sculpture, and not everybody has to be an artist. You just have to be passionate about what it is that you're interested in learning, and put together a compelling application, and you get funded, $5,000.
Neat.
You know, it is very neat. So I've been very active. One of the do-gooding organizations I've been involved with in Red Wing is the Hispanic Outreach. So there's a very large Hispanic population in Goodhue County, mostly because of the dairy farms. You know, it's a difficult job. Nobody else wants to do it. The hours are grueling. You know, you got to be there 7 days a week. Cows don't care. You know, the cows don't care. So there's a very large Hispanic population in they work constantly. So they don't really have an opportunity to gather as a community and celebrate their heritage or, you know, their culture. So they do this once a year in September. And it started out with very modest CMAC grants. I think they got three $10,000 grants over 3 years. And then this year they got another $10,000 grant, and then they got that very large festival grant from the Minnesota State Arts Board, which is another organization that distributes money. So now they got some serious change to have a serious festival. And it's going to be a riot. And that's September 7th.
Okay.
In downtown Red Wing. Trust me, the food is amazing. Mm-hmm. The beer is amazing. The dancing is amazing. The costuming is incredible. It's really something like I've never seen before. And it gets bigger and better every year. And right now, so now this is kind of a dominant cultural heritage festival in Southeast Minnesota for the Hispanic community.
Wow.
And they've kind of taken ownership of it. You know, they really made it their thing. So we're very excited about that.
Wow. That's good to know. You know, we run into different artists up here in the space. We're trying to activate this space with different events. And
you've got some fantastic artists.
Yes. Bria has done some wonderful work. And I think we need to find a way to plug them into CMAC and get them connected. We need a couple flyers up here too. That'd be great.
Oh, sure. I'll make sure you have it. So you have a couple representatives who represent Olmsted County.
Okay.
You know, I'm certainly happy to help. And one thing you can certainly do, which would pull it in. I know you had an exhibit with Brias mm-hmm. in opening with her, and it looked like you had a good crowd mm-hmm. that came for that. You could also host grant writing workshops. CMAC would come in, and you know they would do all the content, and all you would have to do is kind of just drive an audience to here, and they'll do it. They'll come in droves for $5,000. Yeah, an artist will pretty much.
People are interested, right? They want to figure out how to get their work out there. That's good. We made our mark, guys. Our 45-minute mark. That's what we shoot
done?
For.
Is that what it is?
That's what we shoot for.
Are we done?
We can be done. Oh. What else do you want to share?
No, you've given me a terrific opportunity to just talk nonstop, and I apologize.
You did an awesome job. I didn't realize the framing industry was so old. Like, it is an... I mean, if you think back...
You can really tell, like the history, you have, like, a passion for that, and it's cool to see.
Yeah, you know, it's a weird craft. It's something that, like I say, most people overlook. They don't pay much attention to it. When you see bad framing, you notice it. If you're in the framing business, I mean, there's just some horrid examples. So we can't even watch TV without seeing what's going on in the background.
Oh my gosh!
Right? Oh, I know. It's like,
where it hit me is when you had just said the history of it, and then I'm like, well, yeah. If you think back to the days of when they're doing the government offices and like these amazing pieces of artwork, like we're always so focused on the artwork, but we forget that the artist didn't necessarily do the frame.
Right.
Right. We just put them all together. Yeah, the artist did the frame and it was all just one piece.
And, you know, it tastes change clearly over time. And that's a big part of our business is people who are updating. You know, they're bringing something that just doesn't look appropriate for, you know, the colors are wrong or whatever. So they're just, that part of it's changed too. But you're right. Back in, you know, everything used to be what they call gilded, which is where you would take a gold leaf and you would lay it on the frame and you would rub it in and you would do it again. And it's just like a tissue. Mm-hmm. And you would work it very slowly. And you'd have this extremely ornate, hand-carved, closed corner frame with, you know, exotic eagles sticking, you know, just all over, just over the top kind of right. stuff. And I mean, some of our colleagues, that's all they focus on. It was that part of the business. I took a field trip out to New York City once to visit a framer who just all he works is on antique gilded frames. And most of them are damaged over time. You know, they get dinged or whatever. And so you, but it turns out this is a perfect application for 3D printing because you could make a mold very simple. And that's what it is. It's just, you just need a mold so you can put some plaster in it mm-hmm. and put it on the damaged part of the frame. So, you know, technology is slowly kind of working its way into a very, very old profession.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going anywhere. Framing is not,
So this is, I tell the people, this is why DMC was important to us. DMC to us was all about walls. There's going to be a lot of walls. And we're in the wall business, yes. You know? And so that's how we count the opportunities is.
That is, yeah.
Well, walls foresight.
Well, you know, it's true though, because it's not just, you know, framers, obviously. It's, you know, real estate opportunities. It's a different kind of activation that's going on here. You know, it's, people are excited. It's fun to be in Rochester right now.
Things are happening.
I know.
All right. People want to learn more about your business, Josh. Where do they go?
Yes.
Yeah, they can find us on social media, right at MediaCorp or MediaCorpMarketing.com.
And Offices of China Hall, we have the Facebook page that you're probably on. Otherwise, we have a podcast. And just let us know. We'd love to have you up here in the space, do an event, learn more about what's happening here in the community. How about yourself, John? Where can people find out more?
RochesterFraming.com, RedWingFraming.com, NorthfieldFraming.com. I bought all the domains a long, long time ago. I'm sitting on a bunch of them.
There you go.
All these.
If you're looking to buy a domain with framing in it, just reach up to John.
Yeah, Minneapolis. Like, yeah, so I don't know why, but I was told I should, so I did.
Thank you, John. This is right,
thanks,
a
guys.
Fun podcast.
I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yes, you bet. Done. Nice.
Bada bang.
That was great.
That was great.
Was it?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Okay.
The history is
great. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity. I do. You know, I again, this is part of the whole thing. You know, just.